This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Good to have the opportunity to come and join you today. I've been asked to talk in particular about early intervention and its links with child protection. I guess because early intervention is becoming something of a buzzword, because, as Roger was indicating, we always need to remind ourselves within the world of child protection that we're not operating in a small secret garden where the responsibilities for child protection are only the responsibilities of a certain number of designated professionals with child protection somewhere in their title. But somehow or other, child protection, as we've always regularly said among ourselves, is it's everybody's business. Which means the issue of early intervention is particularly important. But it's particularly important at the moment, because we seem to be, as we quite often are, in one of those pivotal and quite disconcerting moments within children's services and within child protection. On the one hand, and the positive, Eileen Munro's work is throwing up some really interesting ideas, and in particular is bringing back into focus some of the kind of reflective approaches that many of us within the sector have been advocating for many years. But she's doing it from a position pretty well within government, which is likely to have some influence and is already starting to influence the way in which legislation and rules start to be amended around child protection. So on the positive, there is an approach emerging that is more reflective, more looking at the needs of children, looking at the possibilities for professionals to be operating in a less constrained manner. But of course, on the negative, this is coming out at a time of the most savage budget reductions in children's services that we have seen, certainly in my living memory. A moment now in mid-February where the budgets for local authorities are starting to become clearer for next year. A moment where actually most local authority budgets that I've seen, and I've seen a fair few of them now, are looking to be preserving social work posts and largely preserving posts within child protection, but are not looking to retain a lot of the early intervention services that many of us have been campaigning for retaining and indeed building on over the years. So at a time of cuts, I think child protection in the purest sense may be slightly more protected than many others. But many of those services which I have long argued are fundamental to stemming the flow of children and families coming into the child protection arena are at very significant threat indeed. So what I want to cover in my short time is first of all something slightly I don't really mean technical, but about let's get our language right, and what are some of the key principles behind early intervention that we should be thinking about. Then I want to go a little bit commentator-ish as to what are the challenges that are facing those of us that have been the advocates of early intervention work over many years. I want to do a very quick skim over a couple of the recent reports to pick out what seem to be some of the emerging themes that might influence the way government is thinking, and then, as usual, I want to try and finish off with what seem to me to be the overarching lessons. Okay, early intervention. Suddenly everybody's using the terminology. And I feel quietly pleased about that because for the last 12, 18 months as chief exec of NCB, I've been very much trying to ensure during the process of the budget reductions that there would remain a really strong focus on early intervention. So when last October, when the Chancellor stood up and set out the arrangements in the spending review and announced that there was going to be something called the early intervention grant that I put in the proposals for, I was initially delighted and thought that we had won a major victory in retaining the focus and the funding and the support for early intervention that I'd been arguing for within government. As is so often the case, you have to wait to see the wording as it comes out later on to discover how you've been fooled in the announcements. The discovery that the early intervention grant is the only source of funding for all of early years provision, all of services for disabled children and the short breaks, for youth services, for teenage pregnancy support and for a very wide range of other services, indeed just about anything that isn't school-based support, was a bit of a blow to me and kind of meant, I think, that my attempts to help government understand early intervention had obviously not been successful. Then when the government announced that although that it's none of it's ring-fenced, so therefore people can spend it as they wish, and saying, therefore, that the level of funding for key things like Sure Start had been protected, and forgetting to say they'd put, it was still in there, but then the sum had been significantly reduced, I felt further discouraged. When the government eventually did indicate that the early intervention grant was a reduction of 11% on the previous budgets that had been added into it, I felt a bit discouraged again when I looked into the figures and realised it was an 11% reduction on the 10% reduction which they had brought in just before. In other words, and this is enough on the technical, the funding available in the early intervention grant is a 20% reduction on the same level of budgets that were in place in March 2010. Enough of that. Key message, we tend to be a bit loose about early intervention, as does government. This is not going to be a language lesson, but it's more just the reminder that there are a lot of different concepts included within early intervention and prevention. There's that sense of universal, primary prevention, the provision of services that every child is receiving, which plays such a crucial part in protecting children from needing child protection services. Universal services such as schools, such as what we had hoped to be children's centres as universal, but they will no longer be universal shortly. Next tier, selective primary prevention services, those services which are particularly focused towards the most vulnerable groups, the groups that are most likely for a child to require protection. Programmes such as the Family Nurse Partnerships, focusing in on new, young parents of their first child who are on their own, most likely to statistically to have child protection concerns arising. Next, the secondary services, responding when there is already an identified issue, the kind of family support services that we have become used to in local authorities that are the most vulnerable to cuts in the coming couple of months. Next, the tertiary provision. This is still intervention, but it's responding when things have already gone wrong. It's providing the kind of focused input. It's the social workers that are supporting, providing the services which are addressing the child protection plan that the child has received. And finally, and this is the quaternary, the fourth tier, which is in essence when things have already gone severely wrong for a child, where the interventions are seeking to make it less likely that those problems will carry on down through the generations. The multi-systemic treatment therapy, the specific high-level fostering interventions, those kinds of interventions aimed to try to at least stop the problem within this generation. And we use now the term intervention, and I wish now I wasn't, really. Eileen Munro's report says, why don't we start talking about help rather than intervention? Intervention feels like big state stepping in, whereas what we're normally talking about in terms of the support available to children early it might be more easily acceptable if it was called help, or indeed if it was called early support. I've always actually liked the term early support and was responsible for developing the government's early support, the last government's early support programme for families with disabled children in the early 2000s, which was overall a programme that families were willing to accept because most people don't mind getting support or help, whereas they maybe don't always like being intervened by. And we can be a bit loose as we seek to define who it is that is providing the early intervention, the early help, the early support. In a lot of our technical discussions, we tend to assume we're talking about paid professionals. If they're not social workers, then maybe they're some other paid and trained and qualified professional employed by the local authority or by a voluntary organisation. A lot of the research is showing two rather conflicting messages. First of all, that qualifications and training significantly improve the outcomes on the child. But secondly, services that are provided by people from that the family can, in one way or other, associate with are more likely to be accepted and therefore more likely to be successful. Which is why we see different bits of research showing the positive benefits of the Home Start type of model, which is very much local people with a bit of support and training helping other families within their area. Much more acceptable form of support coming in to families. Whereas particularly when the levels of difficulties that children face have become more severe, if we're not making sure that there is a proper level of qualification and training available and support, then we come to regret it. So terminology is a complex area. But the key challenges we're facing at the moment, and particularly, as I say, as services start to become threatened, let me pick out some. The first is the importance of engaging as early as possible. And the research evidence in the last few years has been underlining that, really. It's been underlining for us all the impact that early life experiences, early environmental experiences, combined with the genetic inheritance of the child, the impact that these have on almost every aspect of a child's development. Specifically, down to the biological, to the development of the neural pathways in the early couple of years that establish many of the patterns that children will live with throughout their life, are impacted by the kinds of early life experiences. In particular, they're impacted by the early relationships, good and bad. This isn't so new. We've known since Bowlby's research about the importance of bonding, about the risks of bonding not working, and we're gradually getting better at understanding the elements of how to ensure that there is effective bonding for children very early on. But we're seeing more and more from the research evidence now also that the impact of the interventions and support for children very early on directly impact upon a number of the skills that children are going to need in order to be resilient and strong in their later childhood. And the impact of experiences of children in their very early year and 2 years directly impact on the ability for children to learn greater skills later on. So there's different tiers of the ways in which we've found that early experiences of the child impact directly on the way in which children will be able to be looking after themselves or create relationships and form relationships as they move through their childhood. But actually finding ways of providing support in those very early days when the children are most vulnerable is a real delivery challenge for us. And one of the challenges is that, again, that Eileen Munro describes as moving up the scale of intrusiveness. Research gives us, again, two different pieces of knowledge. The first is, it says, that parents are more willing to accept, that the help is more effective for parents if parents have chosen to accept it. So the willing engagement of a parent in the support service makes it more likely to work. But, of course, what we have seen, and to a large extent always known, is we have to be most worried about the families who are not willingly engaging with the family support services. It's the ones who are hiding what is happening that are at greatest risk, and it's their children who are at greatest risk. And the big challenge that any of our services face is at what point do you ratchet up your intrusiveness? Because on the one level, while the longer you can keep your input voluntary, the better the outcomes are likely to be in terms of your input with the child, with most children. But with the children who are at greatest risk, the opposite is true, and we need to find a way of becoming more intrusive and engaging. And as we do so, we run the risk of worse outcomes. I hope I've explained that sufficient to you. There is no silver bullet here. There is a real, genuine issue that all of us face if we're facing families at need as to how to balance the need for intrusiveness for some children with the downside of that intrusiveness if we're not. I'm going to speed up a bit here, I promise you, and within range. The next issue, the more we provide early intervention services, we have learned that the more referrals we get. When we started Sure Start, and I was involved in the development of Sure Start back 10, 12 years ago, we predicted that if we developed it well, we would see initially a rise in the number of social care referrals that would then plateau and start to come down. And we did actually start to see that before a whole range of other factors started to come in to skew the figures. But it's one of those tricky bits. The better you are at providing early intervention, the more referrals are likely to come through later on in the system, at least early. A real challenge about knowing which interventions work, and I will come back to that when I say something about the Graham Allen review. There is a real challenge about people out there, politicians in particular, grabbing for a silver bullet, finding one programme, working with one specific group of children where that the research shows has been highly effective in that setting, in that context, with that group of children in that country, and assuming that all we need to do is roll it out across the nation and it'll work. Much too focused on some excellent programmes and very, very poor at learning what is the transferable learning from that. from a country such as, let's say, for sake of argument, the United States, that doesn't have universal support services for children, and bringing in a model like that into a country like ours that, at least at the moment, still has a certain level of universal support services. A real risk that we will make the wrong decisions in the kinds of interventions that we support and bring into the system. So the final and the largest challenge is how we can ensure that we continue to see investment into early intervention over the coming periods. Okay, and this is very, very brief. Two or three reports I want to pick out for you of relevance. Frank Field produced a report a little time ago aimed at trying to prevent poor children becoming poor adults, aimed at trying to break the intergenerational cycle of child poverty, which has such a powerful impact on child protection issues. His argument, he supported the government's language about refocusing Sure Start on its original purposes. That has been the code that the government has been using for seeking to restrict Sure Start to the poorest areas. However, I was part of developing its original purposes, and therefore I can tell you that its original purposes were to start in the most deprived areas and to use that as a basis of developing a new universal service for supporting families. So the initiative currently rolling through is not to return it to its original purpose, it's to return it to what was seen as a first stage of focusing on the most vulnerable children. Frank Field's argument is, if we get more money in years to come, and let's hope we do, we should put more of it into early years services rather than benefits. He said, as most of us now say, that the evidence shows that there are ways of improving the quality of parenting, and it's a cost-effective, good way of improving it. He focused in on how the home learning environment, improving the ability of children to learn at home, is the most important and, again, the most cost-effective way of improving outcomes for children. And thank goodness he focused on childcare being graduate-led of high quality being a key. Graham Allen, I think I'm going to skip Graham Allen. The arguments, the only real new thing in his arguments were it's cross-party. A sign-up from three political parties about the importance of intervention and a focus on parenting. Serious risks here that I've touched upon. An approach that says, let's only use these particular evidence-based programmes, good though those programmes are in their own settings, is completely misunderstanding the nature of child protection and child support services in this country and in any developed nation. And C4EO, the Centre for Excellence and Outcomes, produced an early intervention report, Declare an Interest, my organisation, NCB, is the accountable body for C4EO, looking at what is the learning from the research about the systems for early intervention. And I'll just bring out the headlines here. Early intervention works when the intervention is brought in at an appropriate time, when it's applied well, and when it's following timely identification. It's not just a standard, let's do this, X, for everybody. There are those kinds of criteria that we do need to be using the evidence, but not just of standalone programmes, that we should be engaging parents, focusing in on communication skills, and developing smarter working practices. So finally, the big lessons from this and from the importance of early intervention. We must continue to press for continued investment in the right forms of early intervention and support. Because if we do not, within 2 to 3 years, we will see a significant rise in the number of child protection referrals coming through too late, at the point when the interventions required will be more expensive and more severe. That investment needs to be delivered by a skilled workforce working in integrated teams. There is more strong research evidence of the benefits of integrated teams bringing professionals from different backgrounds working together, more evidence that supports that as an intervention than almost any other area of children's work. Using in particular what we know from the research about how effectively to support parenting skills and enabling us therefore to monitor the risks much better than we've done up to now. And to share the risks so it does not, the responsibility does not simply lie with a potentially ever diminishing number of child protection professionals, but that the risk that every child potentially faces is one that is shared across our workforce and across our communities.